KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Davey D of Hard Knock Radio talks with former Black Panther Doruba Bin Wahad about the history of gun control and how it pertains to the Black community.
Davey D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. And right now on everybody's mind is the question of gun control. The reason being, we saw the massacre that took place last week or the week before last in Orlando, Florida, where 49 or 50 Black and brown, mostly LGBT people, were killed by a lone gunman. We later come to find out that part of the carnage was also with the police who stormed the place, but that we'll get into that on another day. But what this massacre really invoked was the big debate around gun control and what does that mean. And this is something that has been heavily pushed by the Democratic Party. As we speak today, there's a hashtag called Disarm Hate, and it's really in response to the fact that the Republicans have once again resisted any attempts of gun control. I wanted to talk to former Black Panther Doruba Bin Wahad to get an idea, and I know you've been working on a piece that deals with the history of gun control, and especially as it pertains to Black people. Before we start, I'm just going to give my personal opinion on this. When we talk about gun control, I'm for gun control if everybody is putting their guns down. That means the police don't have military weaponry, the citizens don't have it, those who are dealing it are no longer manufacturing it, and that the access to guns illegally and legally is severely restricted. But until then I think it's a one-sided equation that leaves the vast majority of people at harm's end. But that's just my opinion on that. But Doruba, I wanted to talk to you about this and, you know, you giving us this historical perspective. So how do we look at gun control, especially as it gets raised in the debates today?
Well, as we pointed out, as I pointed out in earlier, the use of guns in the United States is an integral part of this country's history. The European settlers used their weaponry, their guns, to take the land and of the native people, to drive them off of their land, to kill them, to drive them into reservations. It used guns in order to maintain a system of chattel slavery, and it has used guns consistently throughout its history to enforce its national policies and its international position. So violence and the use of violence and the use of guns in the United States is in the DNA of the Republic. Having said that, when we look at how racism has the genotype of racism has evolved over the centuries, over the decades here in the United States, it's become increasingly coded. The language has become increasingly coded, but it's all based on the Second Amendment, which is supposed to have vouchsafed the rights of white folks to own weapons, to own guns. So when we say
the Second Amendment and white folks owning guns, it was really more of a requirement that all white citizens have guns to protect themselves from the fear of slave insurrections. That's how I understood it.
Exactly. Okay. And this requirement was based on a fear in many states, in especially the slaveholding South, and up until a certain point, the slave population, the Black population, outnumbered whites, and there was this endemic fear that if Black people were to rise up, if these slaves were to rise up, against their slave masters, that you know, it will be a complete carnage in terms of spilling of white blood, the inability of whites to be able to control them. This is where the term a well-regulated militia evolves from. It evolves out of the Second Amendment. Today, conservatives, white conservatives, and of course, the language is coded, but today the gun advocates and the gun lobby talks about the well-regulated militia was designed into the Constitution to regulate the excesses of state power. Of an authoritarian state. And if you notice today, whenever you see the gun advocates talk about their right to own weapons, they're talking about the overreach of the federal government. They're talking about how the federal government is reaching into their daily lives and it's too big and it's too broad, and that, you know, their only salvation, their only safety net is to be armed against the intrusions and overreach of the state.
Now, can we put that into perspective, historical perspective of states' rights, if I'm correct, was around protecting the institution of slavery. That's what he meant that's where that whole thing of states' rights comes in.
Exactly, because what a lot of folks don't really realize is that the Constitution of the United States was a cut and paste job. It was a compromise between different interests, between different class and economic and property interests amongst the white settler class. The United States is a settled state. It evolved into a republic from as a European settler state. And so you had different interests. You had the landholding class in the Northeast and in the original colonies versus the aristocracy and the landholding gentry of the South, or the Southern states in Virginia, who had large slave populations. They felt that if they were stripped of their ability to defend themselves against their property rising up against them, that they would in essence be giving up their sovereignty, that they wouldn't have any sovereignty. On the other hand, you had forces that understood that the struggle against Britain, the struggle against the original colonizing power, required that they have a standing, army, that they have a militia, that they have some means to control the political power of the gun, so to speak. I think it's very important to understand that the Second Amendment was a compromise in this regard, as most of the other amendments were, and states' rights were codification of class of the right of property classes in the South and in other areas having the ability to determine their own destiny, to elect and control their own political destiny and their own fortune without having it imposed upon by a central government. So the idea, the notion of American democracy has evolved out of this European settler state and the compromises. I mean, even when you look at the institutions of the United States, the judiciary, the administrative form of government, executive form of government, and their relationship to each other, it's all designed to ameliorate, to negotiate the rights of states to control their own destiny. I mean, you know, a lot of people don't know it, but, you know, most of these colonizers and their descendants were opposed to central banking precisely for the same reason. Mm. Most states used to print their own currency. They used to have their own money. They used to print their own currency. And of course, this led to a lot of problems, and most of which was the sovereignty of the states. And so what we don't understand is that the fears of today around gun regulation, around that certain words have been substituted to gloss over the racist and the class nature of American society. and that the word criminal, for instance, and terrorists have replaced blacks. So now it's the fear of criminals having guns. But before it was the fear of blacks having guns, but blacks were equated with being property, and running away from their master was a crime. So the word criminal hasn't been that far removed from being a metaphor for black folks, for being a description of black people.
Right. Well, let me just stop you there for a second. We're talking with Daruba Ben-Wahad, former Black Panther and political prisoner, talking about gun control and what that really means. Are we disarming ourselves and leaving ourselves vulnerable? What's the political dynamics behind this push in 2016? The fear of black insurrection and it being encoded in the DNA of this country is something that you talk about and shouldn't be overlooked. And I wanted to see if we could look at this from the standpoint of how this very same NRA, which is opposed to any sort of gun reduction, was front and center for gun reduction when black people started arming themselves, in particular the Black Panthers. And this is this real weird situation that we have because, you know, maybe you can explain it from the Panther point of view. Panthers owning guns was like exercising our American rights. But then that deep-seated fear that goes back all the way to the 17th and 1800s, and especially when you started having massive slave insurrections, not just here in the U.S., but all throughout the Caribbean where these slave insurrections were very successful, suddenly the NRA wanted to disarm people. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, you know, one of the things that the NRA has always been consistent with is, let's go back to the end of World War II. At the end of World War II, the NRA had after World War II and at the beginning of the Cold War, the NRA has had its greatest upsurge of political influence and power. There were thousands and literally millions of returning vets who came back to the U.S. who had trained with weapons, and they brought back souvenirs, and they brought back and they were familiar with certain types of weapons. So this has happened episodically across American history. It happened after the Civil War too. You know, but what I was trying to point out is that the NRA really got its political legs underneath it at the end of World War II, when a lot of returning vets came back and they were familiar with weaponry. They used guns, and it was the military that had industry, the gun industry, that had supplied the weapons to the United States arsenal to fight the war. Whether it was Remington or the other
Smith and Wesson
companies, yeah, Smith and Wesson. But you know, like the M1 or Garand, a rifle was a typical rifle that almost every soldier was familiar with. And so when they came home, these weapons, and you got to remember the M1 Garand and the weapons that were used, the majority of the weapons, at least for the average foot soldier or average grunt, was a semi-automatic rifle, which was the M1 and its derivatives. And so when these returning vets came home, they started rifle clubs and hunting clubs, and they developed this culture of the gun. It was a reassertion of the Wild Wild West culture, I mean, which has never really left, you know, white males and American society. But it became increasingly political then, because during the at the end of World War II, there were black returning vets too, who came back. I mean, they were just as familiar with weapons as white folks were,
right.
You know. And they came back, and after the war, we know all about the labor strikes and the labor strife during the war between black workers and white workers. You know that the U.S. government tried to keep in check in order to keep the war machine pumping out the war industry pumping out the tools, the instruments of war, but putting black folks back on the plantation, so to speak, putting black folks back in their place after World War II became essentially very, very politically important.
It's 5:59. You're listening to KBOO Portland. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946 with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab offers airport service, wheelchair accessible vans, and can be reached at 503-227-1212 in Vancouver at 360-694-1234 or radiocab.net. Also, this KBOO program has been made possible in part by Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. Smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, visit gaypdx.com. And Portland Saturday Market, from our hands to yours, celebrating 43 years of American arts and crafts, freshly prepared foods with an international flavor, and local music every Saturday and Sunday from March through Christmas Eve in Waterfront Park. Local artisans, international food, live music, PortlandSaturdayMarket.com. Stay tuned for This Way Out.
Pulse is a place where the international community really comes together. We work the door, I see IDs from all over the world, and people just get there because they can be themselves.
Armed with a semi-automatic AR-15, he opened fire, indiscriminately shooting more than 100 patrons.
I can hear the shotguns closer, and I look over and he shoots the girl next to me.
This attack occurred during the very month when we